मोकम करोति वाचालम पंगुम लंघयते गिरिम यत्कृपातहं वंदे श्रीगुरो दीनतारणम परमानंद माधवम श्री चैतन्येश्वरम। Okay, so we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, Text 1. Okay, ready everyone? Please chant, please repeat. Shri Narada Vacha Hiranyakashipu Rajan Ajayan Ajara Ajaramaram Atmanam Aprati Dvandvam Ekarajan Vyaditsata. So in this particular shloka, so Narada Muni is speaking. And what is Narada Muni saying? Translation. Narada Muni said to Maharaj Yudhishthir, the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable and free from old age and dwindling of the body. He wanted to gain all the yogic perfections like Anima, Laghima, to be deathless and to be the only king of the entire universe, including Brahmaloka. Such are the goals of the austerities performed by demons. Hiranyakashipu wanted to receive a benediction from Lord Brahma so that in future he would be able to conquer Lord Brahma's abode. Similarly, another demon received a benediction from Lord Shiva but later wanted to kill Lord Shiva through the same benediction. The self-interested persons by demonic austerity want to kill even their benedictors, whereas the Vaishnava wants to remain an ever-existing servant of the Lord and never to occupy the post of the Lord. Through Sayujya Mukti, which is generally demanded by Asuras, one merges into the existence of the Lord, but although one sometimes thus achieves the goal of the theory of monism, one falls down again to struggle in material existence. So this particular chapter basically talks about Hiranyakashipu's tapasya. So how did he do tapasya? So we'll be discussing that. And then the person who spoke, the person who gave such a nice class, if you all remember, so he gave such an amazing class. Then he spoke about Yamraj, and then he spoke about the Kulinga bird. So all this was spoken very nicely. And to such an extent that people who were into depression, they were brought back to normal. So you can imagine, he was such a great motivational speaker. Such a great motivational speaker. In no time. In fact, we took a good number of days, maybe 2 weeks or so to go through what Hiranyakashipu spoke. But if you just take the shlokas and if you just speak, so it will take, a minute or so, a few minutes. So in few minutes, by stock, personalities like Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and then the personalities like Rushabhanu, the widow wife of Hiranyaksha, and the sons of Hiranyaksha, all of them, they came out of depression. So you can imagine, what speech was that? What speech was that? And when we were reading, I'm sure all of you might have noticed that Hiranyakashipu was speaking the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. It was not something new that was speaking. And especially students of Gita will understand, oh, okay, yes, this is given in Gita. So he's actually speaking philosophy from Gita. But now you see, what is the person aspiring for? The person wants to become unconquerable, free from old age, dwindling of the body, and then different yogic perfections, deathlessness. So can you imagine all this? A person who understands the philosophy, he understands that, okay, birth, death, disease, old age are there in my life and my aim should be to go back to Godhead. But this person has got something else only in the mind. It's very nice to analyze, especially this is very nice for intellectual people to understand, or they will relish this, that when it comes to philosophy, we all enjoy, especially all of you all enjoy philosophy more than the pastimes is what I've seen. So when it comes to philosophy, it gives titillation to the intelligence. It feels very nice. Oh, okay. I say bulb jalta hai. Dimag mein batti jala. So there is a bulb that glows. So It's really nice, and we really feel very nice, you know, when we hear some philosophy and we understand the philosophy. But now the thing is, even Hiranyakashipu spoke a philosophy. Now, to speak a philosophy, you should understand the philosophy. Yes, so that's but obvious. You cannot just speak like that. So he spoke after understanding the philosophy. This is what is the assumption. Now, the question is, if this person spoke the philosophy so nicely, by which people in depression were brought back to normal immediately, then now the question is that why this personality is not implementing the philosophy in his own life. In fact, the last shloka of the chapter, last chapter we saw that Diti, she gave up the grief and she took up, you know, practicing, or she took up some practice to attain perfection of human life. Now, instead of attaining perfection of human life, why is Hiranyakashipu now wanting some material things? He spoke about this body is temporary, this entire world is temporary, and so many other things he spoke, and now he's aspiring for those temporary things. What is this all about? Even when it comes to Dhritarashtra, he heard the entire Bhagavad Gita. And maybe he might have understood also. But then, no effect. No effect at all. So the question here is it that anyone who understands the philosophy is a devotee? That's the question. This is the question that we'll try to answer now. So understanding philosophy is not a big thing. Anyone can understand philosophy. Yes. But where are we implementing that philosophy is very important. What is the definition of a demon? A demon is the one who applies the philosophy in others' life. He's a demon. He hears the philosophy and then he applies in others' life. Like for example, in our initial days of Krishna consciousness, one thing is very common. We'll go to some class, some Gita class, and then we'll come and vomit everything on people who are there in the house. So this is what people do. And then, you know, we have this instructing mentality. Instructing mentality. Aisa nahi karna, aise karo, aise karo, aise karo. Are, khud pehle implement karo. Have you implemented in your own life or not? That's the question that we have to ask. But this instructing mentality is so great in every individual. As soon as they hear something, they want to instruct. Like Hiranyakashipu did. He instructed. So now, this is a question. This is the realization that, you know, we have to get that when a person understands philosophy, he is not a devotee. He is not yet a devotee. Understanding the philosophy can take the person in two ways. One, to become a demon, and other, to become a devotee. Now let's try to understand how a person becomes a demon and how a person becomes a devotee. In fact, we meet some people while book distribution. So these personalities are the ones who know some philosophy of ISKCON here and there, which is given in Bhagavad Gita. And they will come and try to teach. And they'll say that this is not proper, that is not proper. And once I remember, we were on book distribution. And then we were trying to explain, a new devotee was there. He was trying to explain the Bhagavad Gita nicely. Whatever shloka he knew from the class, he tried explaining that. But what happened is, the other person, he knew few more shlokas. The other person knew few more shlokas. This also happened with some Bhakti Riksha leaders also. So sometimes this happens. There are extra smart people who come into Bhakti Riksha. So the Bhakti Riksha leader might try to tell something. So extra smart people try to quote different shlokas from here and there. Now, anyone who knows the shlokas of Bhagavad Gita, the essence, very properly, they would know how to deal with such people. So this devotee was trying to explain, and that person started speaking more shlokas. This devotee became bewildered. You're not understanding what's wrong. Yes. And the talk went on for a long time, and the devotee was all completely depressed, saying, I don't think I'm eligible to do book distribution. Yes. So like this, we find many, many people. There was one person whom we met, he was speaking philosophy. He was having cigarette in the hand and he was speaking philosophy. I still remember the devotee who was with me. So I was in one corner of the road and this devotee was in the other corner of the road. Then we were distributing books. So this devotee was distributing Bhagavad Gita, trying to speak to him. So this devotee started speaking philosophy, trying to explain him why Bhagavad Gita is important. And then that person took from that point where the devotee stopped and he started explaining few further. Why the philosophy is important. And how he was explaining? Having cigarette in the hand. He was And then he'll just give out the smoke on the face of the devotee, and then he'll start speaking the philosophy. And in fact, he also, then I came running from there, you know, to save this devotee. And you know, then we had a nice verbal fight with him. Then he was asking, you know, smoking on that devotee's face. Fortunately, he didn't smoke. He didn't put the smoke on my face. So he was asking, "So, abhi Prabhupada kahan hai aapke? Where is Prabhupada?" So that devotee was so humble. He answered so nicely. You know, he was answering so nicely at that point of time. So in this way, we understand that understanding the philosophy does not make one a devotee. Let's make it very clear. When we understand the philosophy and now just instruct people around to prove how great I am, then we are just Hiranyakashipus. Not exactly Hiranyakashipu, because Hiranyakashipu is great. No, we are not great. We are tiny. You know, we are mature. We are like mosquitoes. So we are just like the ansha of Hiranyakashipu. So understanding the philosophy and instructing people around and trying to tell them what they have to do, instead of applying in our own life, that is actually the mentality of demons. So everyone, you know, who is attending the session today, so one thing we have to understand is we have to implement that philosophy in our life. That's what makes us a devotee. This is a tendency that is there in devotees in general. In fact, you know, why to speak about anyone? Now, myself, when I started attending a few sessions, so there's a tendency, I know something which you don't know, so I'm better than you. So let me speak and make you understand what is good for you. But now the question is, have I implemented in my own life? That's the question. Yes. It's a very, very important question that has to be asked, especially, you know, when it comes to devotees who have started practicing bhakti. In the initial stage, there's a high tendency, very high tendency, to burn people around. People get burnt out because of the new devotees. You know, that's what is seen. So there was one husband who was coming to the sessions. And then he learnt about various things, especially about offering and, you know, about cleanliness and other things. Now the wife was not coming to the session. She was favorable, but she was not very interested. And then this person, you know, he became so crazy. So you should also know where to implement the philosophy. That's why we have mentors, right? That's why we have Bhakti Riksha leaders, where we can talk to them and understand where to implement the philosophy. So this person, he's just started ordering the wife in the kitchen. So keep these vessels separate, keep this separate. This sink is used for something. This sink should be used for something. And then your kid shouldn't come here. Are your kid is also, no, my kid, right? How can he say your kid? And in fact, one of the other devotee, you know, he started saying, he had come to us and he was asking this question, that Prabhuji, I've got a newborn baby. So now I have to do offering of bhoga. But then, you know, this person will pass urine and stool and other things. Then I don't. So that is the reason I don't touch him the entire day. This is so foolishness. This is so foolishness. Means devotees do this. So one of the important aspects that all of us have to understand, I'm reminding myself also, that the philosophy that we speak has to be implemented first in our life. And then when we reap the benefit out of it, then it has to come out from our mouth. It's not like, you know, hear the philosophy and just vomit it, you know, on the person who is hearing us. No, that will not work. That's what Hiranyakashipu did. He just vomited, you know, in front of all his kinsmen. What was the result? He still remained a demon. He still remained a demon. So that is the difference between a devotee and demon. Now we have to ask a question. You know, what am I? Yes, demon is the one who understands the philosophy and speaks it to others only. And the devotee is the one who understands the philosophy, implements in his own life, sees the result, and tries to share, not instruct. Tries to share the philosophy. Sharing is different than instructing. This is something, again, we have to understand. Sharing means, you know, we can say that, you know, this is what I did, and, you know, it's really helpful. So if you wish, you know, you can also accept this is really, you know, it's working for me. See, this, how was I, and now, you know, these are the qualities that I've got, and I am feeling very nice about it. So this is called as sharing. And then instructing is what? Hey, you don't know how to implement this also. You don't know how to do this also. Are, your life is gone for a toss. You'll rot in hell forever. So do this. You have to do it. In fact, we have seen sometimes we have all comic devotees also, jokers. Yes, sometimes some devotees act like that. So in one of the temples, ISKCON temples only, now since you all are devotees, so you all should know. So sometimes there are some new devotees, and they have been told by the superiors, you have to preach. Yes. And they might have just started chanting 16 rounds and something like that, not knowing much philosophy, not knowing Vaishnava etiquettes. So etiquettes, let me first speak about etiquette, then come back to this person's thing. So etiquette is something that a person normally learns and uses that in the dealings with devotees. How to speak, how to act, etc., etc. When it comes to devotee association or when it comes to preaching also, right? So when I speak to different leaders, so this is what we speak about. How to actually help people. So what is the etiquette of helping people? This is what we discuss. So in the initial stage, we don't know the etiquette of helping people and things like that. So once this devotee was there, and many, many devotees are there like that. Yes. And with time, they also mature and they become nice preachers. So this devotee, he saw a new person. So he came and this devotee started speaking to that new person. And then he started instructing him. You have to chant 16 rounds. If you don't chant 16 rounds, you'll rot in hell forever. And this person has just come to ISKCON for the first time. For the first time. And this person is saying 16 rounds are important. I think 16 rounds are important. But every person has got his own karma backing, right? Or karma baggage is there. So every person will take some time to come to progress. Now, don't take this as a sutra to say that, see, Prabhu, my karma baggage is more, so I'm still chanting one round. No, we have to progress. We have to progress. So in this way, we understand that when we understand the philosophy and just vomit it on other people, not implementing in our life, we are just demons. And we have seen that so many houses, there'll be so much of turmoil in so many houses because of this one reason. Why? Heard the class and just trying to instruct without implementing in our own life. So when it comes to family members, especially, like for example, if wife is a devotee and husband is not, or husband is a devotee and wife is not. So how the preaching is done? The preaching is done not through speaking the philosophy, but the preaching is done through one's own implementation by setting an example in front of them. They should be eager to come and ask, how is this that you have changed so nicely? No, what are you doing? Please tell me. Please tell me the secret. Please tell me the secret. And then with collar tight, then we can speak to them. Yes, this is what I'm doing. And there also we just say that this is what I'm doing. We don't say that you should also do. We just say this is what I'm doing. Yes, this has helped me a lot. And we glorify what we do. And if the other person wants, he can implement. Right? But now when the person starts instructing, then if you want, I can give you in writing. Now, there'll be a great turmoil in the entire house. In fact, the other person who is not a devotee, what will happen, he'll never become a devotee. He will go away from ISKCON forever, forever. They'll start feeling, ISKCON devotees are like this, crazy. This is what they'll feel. They'll go away from ISKCON forever. They'll never become devotee. And who is the reason for not making them devotee? The new preacher. The person who has understood the philosophy and who is trying to be the preacher in the house. That person is the reason to drive away the other person out of bhakti. So this is what Hiranyakashipu did. Hiranyakashipu, he is speaking such great philosophy. For us, it took almost 2 weeks to discuss about the philosophy given by Hiranyakashipu. And look at him. What is aspiration? This person is aspiring for something stupid. That is material things. He's aspiring for that, right? So in this way, we understand that when it comes to devotees, when it comes to understanding the philosophy, we have to understand and implement. Now, the other thing that we have to understand is, how can I understand the philosophy and implement in the right place? That's another question. How to do that and when to speak? This is what has to be understood. And this is possible only when we are under the guidance of some spiritualist, guidance of some devotee. So when we are under the guidance of someone, when we are tightly connected to someone, what happens is that devotee will speak for our benefit. And when we accept the instructions and try to implement that, we progress very fast in devotional service. See, there are many, many devotees in ISKCON. Many devotees are there. But then, no, we cannot say that all devotees will progress fast. In fact, we ourselves have seen there are many, many people who are stuck, who are literally stuck at the lower rung. And they'll be just weekend visitors. They'll just come and during the class, just sleep and get up and have prasad and go home. Such devotees also are there. What to do? But then we were just analyzing why devotees don't progress. Why they get stuck even after 5 years, 10 years of practice? Why do they get stuck at a lower rung? The only reason is they are not connected to any devotee, any superior devotee. That's the only reason. So throughout Bhagavatam, we'll see every single devotee who has advanced in spiritual life, every single devotee was under the guidance of some other superior devotee, some advanced devotee. That's for sure. There is no doubt about that. This is the secret. This is the secret of attaining Krishna this very lifetime. This is the secret. And that secret is being connected to a devotee. Now, another thing is, now what do you mean by connected to a devotee? So connected to a devotee is like having a relationship of a family member. Like, for example, you have your Bhakti Vriksha leaders. Yes. So the relation that we have with our Bhakti Vriksha leader is not leader. He's leader. Well, not like that. He's my elder brother or she's my elder sister. This is what is the mood. And when it comes to elder brother and younger brother or elder sister and younger sister, how is the relationship? Tight bonding. Tight. Right? That is called a tight connection with our superior. So in fact, we should have so much of love and affection for our superior. And that is possible when we spend time, right? When we call them, when we talk to them and so on and so forth, then automatically relationship develops. And when the relationship is strong, when the relationship is literally tight, strong. So at that time, what happens is, whatever instruction is given by our superior, we will take it and we'll implement it as it is without hesitation. Without hesitation. Because then we know, like for example, when it comes to parents, suppose parents are giving some instruction to the kids. The kid is obedient. Let me put the clause also. If the kid is obedient, he will implement as it is. Why? Because he has got full faith on parents that they are my well-wishers. Full faith. Without asking any question, he'll just implement. So that loving affection, that loving relationship should be established between us and our superior. The day we do that, the day we have that loving relationship with our superior, that is the day, from that day onwards, we'll just take off to Goloka. For sure. No doubt about that. Right? So this is one thing that is missing. That's very unfortunate. Very unfortunate. This one thing is missing in many devotees, unfortunately. And many people speak about the secret also. Yes. So that has to be spoken. This is very important. So we have to implement that in our life first. We have to get connected to our superior very nicely. And then we can help other devotees also who are not yet connected. So in fact, we keep telling various senior devotees in our center, they keep saying this, one important aspect, that please get connected to some superior devotee. Some senior devotee who is better than you. Yes, need not be who has attained Krishna. For that also, we need qualification, right? To have a guide who has attained Krishna, we need qualification for that, to have such a guide. So you might not get such a guide because we are not qualified. But one thing is there, but we can get someone who is better than us, who is much better than us, who have been practicing from some time, who have implemented the principles in their life and who are living a pure life. Such people are there. So we have to accept someone, some superior devotee, and follow the instructions given. That's what was missing when it comes to Hiranyakashipu. Look at this. Who is a demon again? A person, even previously in Vedic times, in the demons had guru, like Brihaspati. Who was that? Shukracharya. Shukracharya was the one. So Shukracharya is the guru of demons. But when it comes to these personalities, Ravana and then Hiranyakashipu and all these people, they didn't have, they were not surrendered to any guru. They were not surrendered to any guru. In fact, they were with the mood that if guru gives instruction, they will just cut off the head of the guru. That was their mood. And that is the reason finally what happened with them. they were destroyed completely, completely destroyed, right? So as devotees, when we are intensely aspiring to attain Krishna, this very lifetime, one important thing that, you know, we have to understand is, I have to get connected to some superior devotee. And that connection is not a formal connection. That connection is a loving connection that we have, loving relationship. Like we have it with our elder brother or elder sister. You know, that's what is a loving relationship that every single devotee should have. Every single devotee. If anyone who does not have the tight connection, take it now for sure that that devotee will not progress. He'll get stuck. He'll get stuck for sure. Either, you know, he'll get stuck after coming to 16 rounds, or he'll get stuck at one round itself and he'll go out of bhakti. Right? So this is the point, you know, that is very important to understand when it comes to Hiranyakashipu. Two things. He knew the philosophy, but he did not know where to put that philosophy or where to implement the philosophy. So philosophy has to be implemented in our own life, and by our example, people would understand and people would implement in their lives first. Second is, one should have a person who is, you know, who is a loving figure, you know, for us. As soon as you know, we are in trouble or we are in happiness, the first person, you know, whom we remember, the first special person whom we remember, firstly, you know, we call that person and, you know, we speak to that person. So I feel very fortunate that I have such a connection with my superior. And as soon as anything happens, you know, first thing I, you know, do is call, call and talk to them. And I feel fortunate that I've got you know, such nice counselees also. Now I've seen, you know, the mood of the different counselees. So as soon as anything happens in a life, good or bad, you know, first thing is call. That makes a very nice tight bonding, you know, between the counselor and the counselee, or the Bhakti Vriksha leader or a member. Right? And anyone who has got this tight bonding, what happens is, he progresses. Now suppose, you know, if Bhakti Vriksha leader or, you know, counselor or Shiksha Guru, whoever, if he is there at this level, and then by the tight connection, surely he will come to his level. And suppose the Bhakti Vriksha leader is not progressing, or the counselor is not progressing, then, you know, Lord, you know, gives us an opportunity by which either he'll help the Bhakti Vriksha leader to grow ahead, yes, or, you know, some other you know, senior devotee will come in our life and guide us. Simple. Yes. So the point that I'm making is, we need not wait for anyone who is extremely advanced to come in our life, because that needs a qualification. And we don't have that qualification to have an extremely advanced devotee who can guide us directly. So we have the devotees, you know, in line, who are intermediate, who are doing, you know, very nice bhakti in their own life. They are sincere. And for sure, you know, because of their sincerity and seriousness, they will attain Krishna. They might have not attained Krishna now, they will attain Krishna in future. Yes. So any devotee like that, who is sincere and serious, that devotee should be accepted, you know, as our superior. And we should have a tight connection with that devotee. And to such an extent that when the devotee speaks, with so much of love and affection and care, you know, we take it as it is and we implement in our life. And we will see, from the demonic tendency, now our tendency will shift, you know, to become a devotee. We'll become a nice devotee with so many good qualities, right? So this is the thing when it comes to Hiranyakashipu. Let's come to the first verse now. If you have any doubts in this particular concept that I explained, please post here. Now you look at this. What is Hiranyakashipu speaking, or what is he aspiring? This is exactly what is happening currently in this entire world. The demoniac king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable first, free from old age and dwindling of the body. Second, and then third, yogic perfections. Fourth, to become deathless. And fifth, to conquer the entire universe. These are the five things, you know, which Hiranyakashipu is aspiring for. Now let's try to understand that how all of this is just temporary. I'm sure just by naming that, you people might have already understood. First one, unconquerable. Now what do you mean by unconquerable? Till you have strength, you are unconquerable. But, you know, once you lose strength, you cannot conquer anyone. Simple. It's temporary. Old age, you cannot escape old age. Dwindling of the body, you cannot escape dwindling of the body. Anyways, one day, you know, this body will be useless. And then yogic perfections, what will we do with yogic perfections? Flying in the air and do what? Do what? Flying in the air and do what? Escaping Bangalore traffic. That's the max we can do, you know, with this yogic perfection. And then deathless, who can become deathless? No one can become deathless. And the only king of the entire universe, theek hai, even if you become the only king of the entire universe, how long are you going to be the king of the entire universe? Finally, when you die, you know, you have to give up your post. You have to give up your post. This is what is happening in the entire world currently. So this is called as demoniac civilization. Prabhupada writes, you know, gives this word, demoniac civilization. You know, he uses this again and again in different purports. What do you mean by demoniac civilization? You look at, you know, our own surrounding, the advertisements that come and other things. Now, old age is but obvious, it's normal. And everyone has to go through that and accept it. So when we go against the rule of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so what are we called as? Demons. Simple. So now Hiranyakashipu, who wants to go against the rule or against the principle of life that is set by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he's called as a demon. And what is he expecting? No old age, no dwindling of the body, deathlessness. Now you tell me, how can someone escape, you know, this particular, except bhakti? No, we are not discussing about bhakti. Now we're just discussing about the material life. Okay. So in material life, we cannot escape old age, deathlessness, dwindling of the body. We cannot escape diseases. We cannot escape. So when a person aspires, when he's aspiring to overcome all these things, he is actually becoming Hiranyakashipu. He is actually becoming demon. Like all these, you know, now I don't know if I can say this, but let me make the point. Nowadays, all the old, you know, anti-aging creams which are shown. Put this cream and there'll be no wrinkles and there'll be, you'll look very nice, and do plastic surgery and you'll look very beautiful even in the old age. Are old age has got its own importance. When Dasharatha Maharaj, for the first time, when he was looking in the mirror, the first thing that he found was white hair near the ear, white hair. So as soon as he saw the white hair around the ear, near the ear, he said that I am becoming old, or I have become old. Now I cannot just take care of this kingdom for a long time. So let me give this kingdom to my dear son Ramchandra. This was the statement. And how the statement was made? But just by seeing the white hair. So this white hair and these wrinkle and other things which are there, these are just the indication, bas bhai, ho gaya to buddha ho gaya. You have become old. And now when you have become old, what are you supposed to do? Bhakti and not sense gratification. Now what is happening currently? Please don't take this as an offense. I'm just telling my observations. Yes. Now what is happening currently? Wrinkles have come and you put the cream and the wrinkle is not seen. Or you do lots of makeup and, you know, wrinkles are not seen. And then, you know, the hair are becoming white and then you know, paint it very nicely. In fact, you know, I've seen in my own relatives, very nicely they keep painting every now and then. And it's needed also, you know, sometimes when we go to some parties or you know, somewhere, so we have to look good. So people do that. Yes. But what happens because of all this? When we try to cover our old age, what happens? Whenever we look at the mirror, it's like nice makeup and, you know, whatever. Yes. So when we look in the mirror, we are not reminded of our old age. We are not reminded of our death when we look in the mirror. What are we reminded of? Or, you know, what do we feel when we look in the mirror? Oh, no, I'm so handsome. Oh, wow. It's like, I don't think there is any hero or heroine who can match my beauty or my handsomeness. I don't think so. I don't think so. Yes. This is what will come. And this is another sort of illusion. This is another sort of illusion. And that is the reason, you know, nowadays we see that you know, old people, especially old men and women, both, they dress themselves very nicely. I've seen, you know, when people come out for walking, etc. So, you know, old man or old woman or whatever, they dress themselves so nicely. So nicely. They'll have, for women, they'll have nice long hair and nice makeup and things like that. And when it comes to male, you know, wearing goggles and whatnot. Whatnot. Yes. And having a stick in the hand, and he has to, you know, go around like that, but still dressed very nicely. So we're not saying that we shouldn't dress nicely, but the thing is that this is a mood of covering one's own old age. This is the mood, yes. And when this mood comes in to cover one's own old age, what happens is we don't become serious in bhakti. Never. We'll not become serious in bhakti. Very, very unfortunate this is. This is demonic civilization, but obvious. Demonic civilization. That's what Prabhupada says. Yes. Trying to cover the old age in various ways. You know, that is surely a demonic civilization. And now, when a person is covering himself with the various artificial things, now when it comes to death, yes, so he'll never be aware of death. In fact, he'll be thinking, no, theek hai, abhi time hai abhi. What time hai? Abhi hai aur 30 saal, 40 saal, 50 saal karenge baad mein. Abhi thoda makeup kar lete, thoda party mein jaate, kitty party and then golf and, you know, laughing club and this club and that club and gym and you know, whatever. Let me do. When old people lift dumbbells, no, it's really humorous. Really humorous. Jaan hai nahi kuch karne ko, but still, I have to look good. I need some biceps. Are the biceps is hanging now. The biceps is hanging and you want to make it tight? Oh, this is so abominable. So abominable. So does that mean we're not supposed to take care of health? Whatever is needed in that particular age, we can do it. Going for a walk. Theek hai. But going in a different direction altogether to hide the old age, that is foolishness. No doubt about that. Yes, when it comes to becoming deathless or thinking that I've become deathless is actually a demonic mentality. And, this is not, I would very confidently say this is not the mistake of people in general. This is the mistake of the screen, the media. So, nicely it shows, I'm not remembering the taglines. It has been years now. I've not seen different advertisements of the hair dye. So nicely they show that kala kare, ye kare, wo kare. So nicely they show. And then that lady whose hair were white and she's looking in the mirror. Oh, so many white hair. And then in the next clip, she takes her hair like this and the hair moves, the black hair. And that advertisement is so nice. You never know if she has literally dyed or she has put a wig around. So this is how it is. These advertisements are literally, and then when it comes to wrinkles, I've seen those advertisements, wrinkles, lots of wrinkles are there. And then she applies the cream and just she moves the hand like this, and then her entire face becomes so glowing. And then also the tagline also says in some of the advertisements that why you have to become old. Overcome your old age. This is what Hiranyakashipu is doing, trying to overcome the old age and deathlessness. This is what he is doing. Right. So this is a very abominable thing, to be very frank. It's a very abominable thing. In fact, it's a very it's a basically adult thing, but I can share. So once I'd got a mail from a chairman. So at that time I was serving as a e-counselor on ISKCON Desire Tree. So at that time it was very difficult, so many calls and so many mails, it became viral. The mail ID and phone number became viral at that time. So one of the person was chairman from South Africa, is one of the big company. I'll not name the company. So pretty old. He's like 60 plus, pretty old. So what he texted me was, that I have lost my sensual appetite. I'm not having the enough strength for my sensual appetite. So can you please help? I'm a spiritual counselor. How can I help this person with this? I said, go and approach a doctor. Yes. But then, when I was actually thinking about that, so I was feeling that this is all because of this demonic civilization. Now, after some time, the sensual activity of the person has to go down. There's no question about that. Yes. And it goes down. Naturally, it goes down. But now, when it comes to the tablets and when it comes to the syringes and when it comes to so many other things which are there, drugs and this and that, steroids. So what are all these things? Just to keep oneself, really good and things like that. And that's why these Chinese people, I don't know if they eat now also, they eat fetus. Why? So that I increase my sensual appetite and strength and I look beautiful. Now then, so I'm eating this fetus. Yes. Look at this. Look at this. This is called as demonic civilization. No doubt about this. No doubt about this. So we have to be aware of this. This is very important. To have this awareness is very, very important. Nothing artificial should be done, you know, which is not in accordance to the natural course of action. When it comes to natural course of our life, Lord has designed something. Birth, death, birth, disease, death, old age and death, they are just part of life. We cannot escape that. We cannot escape. Yes, we can break the cycle of birth and death by bhakti, but we cannot escape this. Yes, we cannot escape just for superficial adoration from people around. We cannot try to escape this. And anyone who does that, anyone who tries to escape, I'm saying try to escape because the statement is very clear. You cannot escape. We cannot escape. So we can just try to escape, but we cannot escape. But anyone who tries to escape is just competing with the mood of Hiranyakashipu. Simple. Trying to become demoniac. Trying to become demonic. So that is the reason, you know, this there is not much difference between a pious person and a demonic person. So even for that matter, devotees also. Yes. So not much difference between devotees and demonic people. There are only few parameters which actually differentiates between the two. And one of the important parameter is, am I abiding by the natural course of life that is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to me? Am I okay with it? Now, Prabhupada also mentions this in one of the plays that scientists want to get some medicine or something to become immortal. Now, Hiranyakashipu did tapasya, and scientists are also doing tapasya in the laboratory. So, what is the difference between the two? Tapasya. And what happened to the end of tapasya? Hiranyakashipu did tapasya for many, many celestial years. We'll anyways read that. And how much time he lived with that strength? For few years. Few years, literally few years. Celestial years is, we'll discuss the calculation of celestial years in the coming verses. We'll do that. So in this way, you know, we devotees have to be really aware. Am I accepting things as it is when they're coming to me? Am I doing the needful? Or I'm just going over and above, you know, that natural course of action to hide that or to overcome that. This is something which is not acceptable, right? So this is what is the purport that we can understand from here, that how we shouldn't be demoniac, how we shouldn't be demoniac. And various points that I mentioned were three points basically. The first thing that we started with in our class was about the philosophical aspect, understanding the philosophy and not implementing in our own life. Second, not having a guide who can actually guide us. And the third one is this, that having a mood to cover up the natural course of life, having the mood to cover up that, trying to overcome that particular thing. Right? So in this way, we see if we now, now if you try to analyze all the advertisements and everything that is going on around, then we'll be confirmed, we'll believe with full firm, we'll have a lot of confidence in this, in the words of Srila Prabhupada when he says that this entire civilization is demonic civilization. Then we'll have complete faith on that. Complete faith. So when Prabhupada says this, you know, initially when I used to read, you know, my initial days, so I was not very much convinced, you know, with Prabhupada's things sometimes. But then when I started analyzing, you know, I have to read, and then when I started analyzing things around, oh yeah, Prabhupada is speaking the truth. This is how it is. This is how it is. This is how people are. And once we start getting that connection, what is happening around in the outside world, in my own life, and what is Prabhupada speaking? If we can just establish that connection, the taste in reading Prabhupada books increases like anything. It feels like, oh, this is nectar. The Prabhupada books are nectar. Even when Prabhupada is saying demons, even when he's saying fools and rascals, it's still nectar. Even the lectures of Srila Prabhupada will become extremely nectarian. You know, when we start hearing attentively, reading attentively, and connecting, you know, the outside world and in our own life, you know, whatever Prabhupada is mentioning. Right? And throughout these Bhagavatam series of sessions, you know, whatever we are having, that's what we're trying to do. So whenever we talk about demonic, especially when I read about anything demonic, you know, first I look into myself. You know, surely this quality will be there. I'm confident about it. And I do find those demonic qualities in myself. And then, you know, when we read Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's purport on that particular verse, then we'll understand, oh, okay, this is how it is. These are the demonic qualities. This is how it should be. Or this is how it is, and this is how it should be. And this is how I can overcome. And then when we understand the solution and implement in our life, then yes, now we are progressing. Right? Or else our half an hour of reading and half an hour of hearing or whatever will remain on the paper or in our WhatsApp messages. You know? 16 rounds done, half an hour reading done, half an hour hearing done. Right? So in this way, you know, Hiranyakashipu, what he tried doing? Next verse, text 2. In the valley of Mandara Hill, Hiranyakashipu began performing his austerities by standing with his toes on the ground, keeping his arms upward and looking towards the sky. This position was extremely difficult, but he accepted it as a means to attain perfection. So now look at this. How he wants to attain perfection? By standing on toes. Yes. So before I was into choreography and my specialization was in contemporary dance. So in contemporary, you know, you actually go around on the toes and you jump, taking the help of the toes. Yes. And you keep the feet pointed and things like that. So I can just imagine, you know, when he's standing on the toes, so how difficult it will be, how difficult. And then he's standing on the toes and then raising his arms and looking upward. Now just imagine if the Yuga Dharma for this age was this, stand on your toes every morning for 2 hours, stand on your toes. Now raise your arms up and look up. Now you cannot see the sky because, you know, we are staying in apartments. We'll look at the ceiling. The fan is moving and look at the fan for 2 hours straight. And only if you do this every day, then you'll go back home back to God. Suppose that was the scene. Suppose if that was the case, then just imagine, you know, what would happen. But we are so fortunate to attain perfection in our life. What are we supposed to do? Just hold the weightless beads in our hand and just move those weightless beads in our hand with the beautiful Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If we just do that, we attain perfection in our life. In fact, whatever this personality is asked, now whatever Hiranyakashipu has asked, even we without asking them to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotees normally get it. Again, we go back to the verse 1. Unconquerable. Tell me, which sadhu is conquerable? Who can conquer a sadhu? Who can conquer a sadhu? Who can conquer a saint? No one can conquer a pure devotee of the Lord because he's tightly connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He cannot. Next is free from old age and dwindling of the body. A pure devotee, after giving up this body, he attains a spiritual body. So never ever he's going to have old age and dwindling of the body. Yogic perfections. All the 8 mystic yogic perfections the devotees get when they become pure devotees, but they don't use it. They say, what's the use of all this? It's a waste of time. Yes, they don't use it. Deathless, once you attain spiritual body, there is nothing called as death. And to be the only king of the entire universe, we have Prabhupada, you know, king of all the white skin and black skin and all the devotees all around. Yes. So automatically, even without endeavor, a person becomes whatever Hiranyakashipu is asking. Now devotees normally get it easily. How? Just by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So that is the reason devotees don't aspire for anything. They don't aspire for anything. The only thing that they aspire for is the beautiful lotus feet of Krishna. Beautiful lotus feet of Krishna. And how much beautiful? So it is described in Shastra. It is described by the gopis of Vrindavan. So they say a very nice thing. Shila tranan korai sidati tinaha kalila tamanaha kanta gachati. So here the gopis are saying, oh Krishna, where have you gone? When you walk, in fact, you know, when we touch your lotus feet, when we touch your lotus feet, it becomes so reddish. And we are fearful that it will hurt, you know, your lotus feet. In fact, it is described when Lakshmi Devi, she massages the lotus feet of Vishnu, she is very fearful. And she takes care, she massages, you know, very softly. Because as soon as she touches the feet of the Lord, it becomes extremely reddish. That's how soft and beautiful the lotus feet of the Lord is. Even when Yashoda Maya would touch, she would be scared. Oh, okay. No, I shouldn't hurt my baby. Same thing the gopis are also saying. Oh, no, this is how it is. This is how beautiful or soft, no, the lotus feet of the Lord is. And then, why devotees aspire for lotus feet of the Lord? When a devotee aspires for the lotus feet of the Lord, the lotus feet of the Lord is called as plavam. Plavam. Yat pada pallava plavam. The pada pallava plavam. So the lotus feet are called as plavam or boat. So this lotus feet of the Lord acts as the boat for a devotee or a living entity to cross what? Bhavasagar. To cross this material ocean. So the devotees don't want anything. The devotees just say that I want your lotus feet. Dhruv Maharaj, once we complete Prahlad Maharaj, this one will go to Dhruv Maharaj also. So when it comes to Dhruv Maharaj, when he got darshan of the Lord for the first time, you know what Dhruv Maharaj did? He immediately ran at the lotus feet of the Lord and he started licking the lotus feet of the Lord. As if it's a candy. And he started licking the lotus feet of the Lord. Yes. So that's how great it is. And it is very nicely said in Brahma Samhita. I'm not able to remember that exact Sanskrit shloka, but it says that when it comes to the jnanis, when it comes to the yogis and others, so they can just max to max aspire for the light coming from the tip of the toe. And that is also very difficult for them to attain. Only for that light which is coming from the tip of the toe, you know, these yogis and all the jnanis are aspiring and they are not able to attain even after lifetime. And look at devotees. Devotees just chant every single day and they live their life, you know, very nicely, fully Krishna conscious. And the Lord gives the entire lotus feet to them. And the devotees keep it on the head or keep it on the chest. Yes, and they have a nice time. They relish so much. Right? So in this way, it is very nicely mentioned, you know, throughout the Shastra that the lotus feet of the Lord are the ultimate goal of devotee's life. They don't want anything in their life. They just want to attain the lotus feet of the Lord. They always want to be at the lotus feet of the Lord. There's a very nice prayer, which is there in Shikshastakam, which says, Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patita mamishame bhavambudho kripayata pada pankajam stita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. O son of Maharaja Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servitor. Yet somehow or the other I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So this is the prayer, you know, that is offered. This is the prayer that is offered. Yes, that please make me a dust particle at your lotus feet. Bas, aur kuch nahi chahiye mujhe. I don't want anything. Yes. Until date, anyone who has attained the lotus feet of the Lord. And this is the humility of the devotees also. They don't say that I want your lotus face. They say, no, I'm not eligible for that. I'm just asking you for your lotus feet. So please give me that. So in this way, devotees offer wonderful prayers. You know, that I don't want anything in this world. I just want you, O Lord. I just want you. I want to attain you this very lifetime. So in this way, you know, we understand that devotees, when they practice devotional service, they get everything whatever Hiranyakashipu has asked and the tapasya that he is doing. Everything that they get. But still, devotees are not interested in all that because they are getting something much, much, much higher. That is the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the beautiful form of Krishna himself. So in this way, you know, we see that chanting 16 rounds is much, much better than the tapasya that Hiranyakashipu did. So when you're doing 16 rounds, then we can pat our back and say, you're much better than Hiranyakashipu. Yes. So I would like to shift from Bhagavatam to Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is the book that I'm referring to. And tomorrow is the festival called Chidadahi Festival. And Sri Sri Gaur Nithai, Krishna and Balaram in this age of Kali Yuga, when they appeared, so they manifested this wonderful festival where a devotee called Raghunath Das Goswami, he cooked Chida Dahi for all the devotees. And firstly, it was offered to the Supreme Personality, that is Gauranga Nityananda, Krishna. And then it was distributed, you know, to all the devotees. So tomorrow, if possible, I would request make this, you know, very, very simple. So that's the reason I thought, let me tell you all how to make this. It's a very nice recipe, very simple. And when we are offering, we can offer with love and devotion. We can actually tell the Lord that I cannot give you anything, Lord. The only thing that I can do is refer the Shastra and do what the other devotees are doing. So I'm doing the same thing what your pure devotee Raghunath Das Goswami did for you. So please accept this offering, which is an offering of my heart. And then, you know, with this, in this way, you know, we can offer this. So please hear the recipe. So you need not do it exactly. Please do it proportionately. So this recipe, the quantity that is given, the quantity is for the entire village and the surrounding villages also. Okay, so I'm just going to read it now. You know, you all are very good at cooking, so you all can just decide how much to put and what to put. 5 or 7 especially large earthen pots were got, and in these pots a brahmana began soaking chipped rice for the satisfaction of Lord Nityananda. So chida basically means the chipped rice, poha. So the poha is taken and it is soaked first. So maybe in the water, it is soaked first. And then the next thing that is done is, in one place, chipped rice was soaked in hot milk in each of the large pots. And then the half the rice was mixed with yogurt, sugar and bananas. So here it is very clearly given. So either we can soak it in the water first and then remove and soak it in the milk, or directly it is soaked. In one place, chipped rice was soaked in hot milk. So we soak in the hot milk and in each of the, so it was done like that. And then half the rice was mixed with yogurt. So you make two parts of it. And one half of it is mixed with yogurt, sugar and bananas. And this banana also, it has got a name. Where is that banana? Yeah. Kala, Champa Kala. So the small bananas which we get in Bangalore, those small bananas can be not the hybrid ones looking small. There are small bananas. We call it, I think, Yelaki banana. So that one. And then, so yogurt, sugar and banana. So that's one part. And the other half was mixed with condensed milk. So other half was mixed with condensed milk and a special type of banana known as Champa Kala. Then sugar, ghee and camphor were added to it. This camphor is edible camphor, not the arti camphor. Edible camphor. So in this way, these two aspects are done. So I'll repeat. So we take a vessel in which we soak the chipped rice. So here it's given hot milk. And then half of it, you know, we remove. And then we soak it with, or we mix yogurt. And then we mix sugar and then bananas. And then the other half which is there, in that we mix condensed milk and then banana, sugar, ghee and camphor. So these are the two bowls that you're going to offer tomorrow. This is the two bowls that I'm talking about. So now when it comes to this one, ISKCON devotees, obviously this is there, but you know, we have our own innovation. So ISKCON devotees have their innovation. So instead of banana, so devotees add mango, jackfruit, dry fruits, yes, and so on and so forth. So this is the authentic, this one, you know, adding bananas. Along with that, we can add other fruits also. You know, we can add mangoes, we can add jackfruit and apple and some dry fruits, cashews and raisins and almonds and whatever, yes. And then, you know, after making, then we can make it so nicely, and then we can nicely garnish the top. So whenever we do the offering to the Lord, it has to be very, very perfect. So when we are doing offering, it's not like we take a bowl, put rice, put dal, put chapati and put the sabji on the same. So how do we offer to the Lord? We offer it in a way, like for example, in restaurants, you know, the way they get it, it's just by looking at it, the mouth will water. Right? Nice garnishing is done, and just by looking at it, or some cookery show. They'll say, now garnish with coriander leaves or garnish with dry fruits and whatever. So our entire offering should be like that. And then finally, at the top, the topmost thing, tulasi should be kept. And then a glass of water, and then we can offer to the Lord. Offering procedures, you can ask your Bhaktivarsha leaders. So if possible, please make this and offer to the Lord tomorrow and relish. Yes. Did I tell sugar? Sugar was told, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, so thank you very much. So please make this recipe and please let me know. Tomorrow also we have class. So, and also you can inform your, you can send photos to your Bhaktivarsha leaders. How was your offering? Let me take questions now. These days, work require these kind of stylish look. If you are not, they comment. Yeah, sure. Now, see, that's what I didn't say that we should do or we shouldn't do. But you know, the description of why this civilization is called as demonic civilization. Well, this is what we discussed. So, and then again, the point was added, whatever is needful, that has to be done. Whatever is needful, but not over and above, you know, the little needful thing that is required. Sometimes we go literally over and above and we literally forget. In fact, one of my students, you know, a very nice devotee, you know, she's, when I took a course here in Whitefield, she, in ACS level, she was coming. So a PhD. So she was telling me that I was working in so-and-so post in my company. And one day, you know, why she resigned? So I asked her, why did you resign your job? So she told, one day I sat in front of the mirror and I had some time, so I was looking at myself and I was almost in tears to see that how I've changed completely. What is my attire currently? You know, what all things, you know, are there on my face and how artificial my face has become and how I'm acting and so on and so forth. And you know, tears flowed from the eyes and she made this point that is the reason I gave up my job. So she said that. Yes. So that's what is over and above, you know, whatever is needful. So whatever is needful, yes, you know, we can do that. Now, obviously, I've also worked in corporate, so not a very, very stylish look is, you know, expected. Yes. What basic stuff, you know, that makes us presentable. This is the word that we can use. Presentable. You know, that is what is needed. So hope this answers your question. Premanjana Churita. No, that this is not the verse. There is some other verse which talks about Jnanis and Yogis. Where Guru asks his Chela to kill one animal, what should that Chela do? Firstly, he is not a Guru. There is nothing called as a Guru speaking about Bali. There is no Guru like that. There is no bona fide Guru like that. Who is a Guru who understands what is given in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam? And who is a guru who uses those principles given in Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam to help the disciple to attain Krishna this very lifetime? He is called guru. Guru is not the one who does some tantric stuff and then, you know, gives bali and this and that. That is just all bogus. Obviously, that is given in the tamasic Puranas. The tantric stuff is given in that. But that is not something that will take us closer to Krishna. So we cannot call such personalities as guru. When the concept Uttama, Madhyama and Adhama Purusha, Uttama should follow what guru says without thinking about the good. In this case, if Chela follows guru's order, so hope this answers your question. Yes. So that is the reason we ourselves also should have knowledge from Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. So that we can understand what my guru is speaking. Is it correct or not? Obviously, you know, we don't once before accepting the guru, we judge. We analyze, you know, very nicely. And once we accept Guru, we follow. That analysis time which is there, no, that has to be very good time. Where you have Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam knowledge and then you, you know, look at your aspiring Guru and then you make out, you know, is he bona fide or not? So unfortunately, what is happening now is people don't have this knowledge from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. What else can we expect? No knowledge from Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. Then what happens? Anyone, you know, you're just talking about animal killing. There are few so-called gurus, some tantrics who give narabali. Get just mature girl. No, girl who has just got mature. We should give her bali. Now we have to give bali of a newborn baby. Like this, you know, many nonsense things happens, especially in India. Especially in India. The place which has to be spiritual hub, you know, all these things happen there. Yes. So, Mataji, this answers your question. One question, okay, related to chanting. In the book Krishna, it's mentioned that there is no difference between the name form, transcendental form of Lord Krishna. How to understand this? Oh, this is a lifetime process, Mataji. Lifetime process to understand. So, it's not that easy. But yes, Krishna and his name are non-different because as soon as we say Krishna, Krishna is present here. Now suppose I'm calling out to some devotee called Abhishek. Now when I say Abhishek, he's not here. Now he's there in his room somewhere. So, but when I say Krishna, he's actually there. That this is what is the understanding. And he's called as absolute. He's called as absolute. Krishna is called as absolute. Absolute means there is no relativity. So absolute basically means everything related to him is also absolute. And it is identical to the personality. So the name, form, qualities and pastimes of the Lord are absolute. It basically means it's identical to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what this basically means. Yes. But you know, this is theory. With time, when we start chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra properly, regularly, without offenses, then you know, the day will come when we'll understand that Krishna's name, form, qualities, pastimes are non-different. And that is the time when we cannot stop chanting. We cannot stop. When we reach that point, when we understand Krishna and his name are non-different, and just by chanting the holy names of Krishna, I'm associating with Krishna, then you know, we can never ever stop chanting after that. So that's the point. As a devotee, do we color hair or not? As a devotee, I would suggest remove the hair. So there is no... Although Hiranyakashipu or Ravan were having great knowledge and know all the philosophy, but still they were demoniac in nature, having impurities like lust, anger, etc. How they were able to do that intense meditation and austerity and get benedictions from Lord Shiva or Brahma? Don't they require purity within themselves while doing so? Can doing austerity with very difficult postures replaces the requirement of purity or love for God? You're absolutely correct. No, purity is needed. Piety is needed. A person who doesn't have piety from past lives, that person will not have determination. You see, people who don't have determination, it's very difficult for them to do anything, right? So when it comes to this particular aspect, so they should have piety to do austerity. Yes. Purity, yes, purity is needed. But you know, if you compare purity and piety, piety is more that is needed, you know, when it comes to austerity. And also when it comes to Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, etc., they were not normal people, no? They were Vishnu Dutas. So they can do whatever, you know, whatever possible. So all of them. So no one in the past, before Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, they did that austerity. No one in the present are doing, and no one in the future will be able to do. This is what is the statement that is made in the Shastra. No one. No one can do the austerity that you know they are doing. So anyone who comes to the level of austerity, like for example, Ashtanga Yoga also. So Ashtanga Yoga, so this is a very, today afternoon day I was meditating on this point, recollecting the point basically. So the person who comes to Ashtanga Yoga or Jnana Yoga, their basic prerequisite is to get purified from the mood of sense gratification. That is the basic stuff that is needed. So in this world also, when someone does austerity, so that person should be freed, you know, from this doership mentality and sense gratification tendencies and others. Then the person will be able to take up austerity. But if a person is just doing austerity, having some determination from past piety, and he's doing austerity, he'll not be able to continue for long. Not possible. Like for example, you take up Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur would chant 22 hours a day, 192 rounds. Now you tell me, 192 rounds if a person chants every day. What sort of austerity that is? Obviously, he was relishing. He was not feeling it as austerity. But suppose we see it, we might see it as austerity. But how is he able to continue? No, by his purity, by the blessings of Krishna. Yes. But when it comes to Hiranyaksha, we can understand that he, from past life, no, or his original identity is Vishnu Duta. So he's able to do all this by the mercy of Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not by his own strength. Not by his own strength. But this question, can doing austerity with very difficult posture replace the requirement of having purity or love of Lord? No. It can never replace. Never. Never. In fact, the person might start doing it, but he might not be able to continue. A nice recipe of description. Yes, please make and please send the photo. If he wanted to test his chela. Okay, the animal killing part you're saying. So if he wants to test His chela, he a true guru will not ask this bali of this and that. The true guru, let me tell you how a true guru tests. So this, my guru was speaking, so I can speak as it is. How he tests. So suppose you are a good preacher, you are in a crowd, you are giving nice class, etc. You have a lot of followers. Then the guru will make sure that he will chastise you in public. Now that is much more, here you're talking about animal killing. There is killing oneself. So at that particular point, when the guru is chastising him in public and still he is able to take it, yes, Guru Maharaj, whatever you say, I will do it. So that is the test that the guru puts. And sometimes the guru would act as if he's disabled or, he's weak. And if at that time the disciple who is there, he's a mortal being. The guru is like, Tata, go. You're not eligible to be my disciple. So these are the different tests. And these tests basically talks about some quality, humility, tolerance, and other things. So the test that you're talking about has no quality associated with it. Yes. So it cannot be considered as a test. So once you understand that what test the guru puts also, that's also important. As you describe that one should follow Vaishnava etiquettes in order to talk about this message, could you list them? The first important Vaishnava etiquette is we have to approach a person with humility. And then if the person is really submissive, we speak. And only when the person surrenders, then we have the authority to speak strong words. In fact, it is recommended not to speak strong words, but if it is needed, if we feel that the person is going out of the way, and if that person is really surrendered or literally having a lot of hopes on us and taking shelter of us, we are not eligible to give shelter, but suppose. If that is the case, then yes, we have to speak some strong words. But when we are trying to preach, we are humble, we are tolerant, we put the things forward as if it shouldn't hurt the people at all. So now, see, when it comes to the class currently, the class which I gave. Now, suppose we go on describing demonic civilization for people around. People will go crazy. They will never take up bhakti. This was only meant for this group of some 70 people who attended today's class. That was only meant for them. Now, suppose this class is spoken out, then it will be crazy. Crazy stuff, because the entire world is following something and we are speaking something against that. Right? So we should know what to speak and where to speak. Sometimes the philosophy which is there, that has to be sugar-coated and spoken. Like for example, when the parents, when they give medicine to the kids, they'll put honey and whatever and then they give. Or it will look like chocolate and they'll just put it in the mouth. Or put it in a laddu and feed. Something. So that's sugar coating. So we should know how to sugar coat also. Yes, and then speak. So Vaishnava etiquette basically means not to hurt anyone. So we don't hurt anyone. We have to be tolerant. We have to be tolerant, non-instructive, and compassionate, always in prayerful mood within, and so on and so forth. And respectful also. Respectful. In fact, Vaishnava etiquette is a series of class in itself. So I cannot just list like that. But these are the few. That's why I mentioned Tattva Darshi, not Tantrik Guru. If Guru wanted to just test, not exactly. Okay, I think I answered your question. In lockdown, we all are without hair. Yeah, true. I saw that in many devotees. Devotees who are working in corporates manage the duality in identity, how one dresses, behaves, greets, eats. Any practical tips on managing this duality? This is a very unfortunate situation, yes, of being dual, and it's expected also. Now in corporate, we cannot be straightforward at times. Their diplomacy is used, and all acting is needed, all drama is needed, yes, speaking to people. And even when we are not comfortable with some sort of dresses, it's expected to wear sometimes. Whatever minimum is needed, or whatever needful is needed, that has to be done, little. So we need not go to a very great extent, to the other side and transform ourselves completely. Just imagine, you are a person who has only prasadam. And then you go to a team lunch or something, and then everyone is having, and everyone is acting cool by eating beef or eating chicken or whatever. Yes, and then looking at all the cool people, who are going to rot in hell forever. So looking at them, then if we also endeavor or think that even I should have, so that people will accept me, then that's something which is not correct. That's something which is not correct. Yes. So when it comes to principles, we don't violate at all. At all. No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. There is no question of violating this. Come what may. Come what may. But when it comes to the external appearance and things like that, or obviously when you go to office, you cannot say Hare Krishna. Like your boss is coming and you say Hare Krishna. Yeah, so it will not work. And nowadays people use this word secular. And they've made, firstly, people don't understand what do you mean by secular. Secular, nowadays people feel no religion means secular. Secular means allow people to follow their own religion. Yes, but nowadays secular means no religion. That's how people have portrayed that. So we cannot do that. Right. So whatever is needed, if say hi, hello is needed or whatever, we have to. And wherever things are needed to, or the behavior has to be changed to get the things done, yes, we have to, as a service to Krishna, so that we retain the job and we earn some money. But otherwise, when it comes to breaking four regulative principles or something which will drastically affect our bhakti, shouldn't be done. Come what may. Even if the job goes, it's okay. Right? So, like for example, you go to a team lunch. One of my students was telling that they were forcing me to have hot drink, alcohol. Yes. So, Prabhuji, what should I have done at that point of time? He said, then I asked, what did you do? I didn't have. Yeah, that's what we have to do. Yes. Nothing doing. In fact, if possible, not going to that place at all. Right? In fact, you all can approach your respective Bhakti Vriksha leaders. They have more experience when it comes to all this. They can explain, because they are practicing very nicely and they are working also. For me, I just worked for a few years and I enjoyed my work and I was fanatic as always. Never ever I'll go to team lunch. Never I'll speak anything nonsense. Lunch table, they'll speak something and then I'll just smile and get rid of that place. So I was very fanatic. Yes, so that will not work for grihasthas in general. So you have to understand how to deal when it comes to office being a grihastha. So you can approach your Bhakti Vriksha leaders and ask them. But one thing is clear, principles cannot be violated. Come what may. So that's what is the bottom line.